Welcome to the Body Confidence Podcast, where perfectionists go to overcome comparison, feel at peace in their body, and discover simple practices to start believing they are enough. Here's your host, copywriter, body confidence coach, and chai tea connoisseur, Rebecca Storm. Hey, my name is Rebecca Storm, and I want to welcome you to another episode of the Body Confidence Podcast. This is season one of Complete Confidence, the new series in this podcast. And this episode is featuring our expert guest for the entire season. So every season, we have one epic expert guest. And this season one is setting the bar pretty high. This woman is incredible. I am very excited to welcome and introduce our guest for this episode, Patricia Moreno. She is the founder of Spiritual Fitness. I love this concept. She goes really deep into it in this interview. With over 20 years of teaching and public speaking experience, she has been a trailblazer in the wellness world for many years, creating integrative practices, innovative workouts, and empowering leader trainings. Patricia has changed the lives of tens of thousands of people worldwide. In an effort to end her own struggle with her weight, eating disorders, and body image issues, she created her signature workout, the Intensanti Method, a revolutionary concept that combines the power of positivity, high energy cardio, mindfulness, and meditation to help people unleash their inner warrior and become greater than they ever thought possible. Patricia is an international speaker, inspiring worldwide at Google, Equinox, Nike, Reebok, The Limited, among other notable organizations. She has been featured in publications such as Oprah Magazine, Vogue, Shape, Glamour, Well and Good, and she's been on The Today Show, Good Morning America, and Dr. Oz. And adding to her incredibly impressive resume is the Body Confidence Podcast. That's right. She is on my podcast right now, coming to you, and she is so strong. You can feel her strength and her wisdom coming through the speakers. I couldn't be more thrilled and humbled to be speaking with her today, right now. Patricia, thank you so much for being our featured guest on this season of the Body Confidence Podcast.
I love it. I think you're doing amazing things. And I think that I just love teaming up with people who are on this mission to like bring body confidence to the forefront and all the different ways that you're doing it. I love it.
Thank you. That means so much to me. Can you give us a little bit of background on yourself and what you do and kind of the story of how you came into doing this type of work?
Yeah, definitely. So I have been in the fitness industry. I started teaching aerobics when I was in high school, before I think I was probably 17. And one of the reasons that when I walked into a workout class, I felt like, oh my gosh, this is where I am devoting the rest of my life to, was because when I found exercise, I felt like alive. I felt empowered. I felt like there was just everything good about it. And I'm one of 11 kids. I'm the ninth child, 8 girls and 3 boys. And we grew up with a lot of focus on appearance. And from Mexican descent. And my mom really felt like a lot of people actually still feel, is that our body, how we look, really determines the quality of life that we'll have. And so I was put on a diet when I was 8 years old. I remember distinctly this moment of being in the bathroom, being weighed by my parents. And when they saw that it said 130, the shock on their face was like fear, panic. Yeah. And I always say that I was induced into the diet culture in that moment, and a spell of unworthiness was cast on me because I felt like in that moment, my parents really made this judgment that my weight was wrong. Therefore, I felt I was wrong. And, you know, my mom took me to different diet doctors and different weight loss centers. And I kept dieting my way up the scale until in my early adulthood, I was 212 pounds. And just what I accumulated over those years was just this feeling of shame and guilt. Like, food to me was terrorizing. And I didn't know how to be around food. And there were no, like, my home was not a healthy lifestyle home. We went from extremes, dieting and restricting and weighing and measuring and counting, to the complete opposite. And our home was filled with ding-dongs and ho-hos and corn chips and all of these junk foods that we had complete free rein to. And so I didn't ever feel like I had control or even knew what that was or looked like. And then I found exercise and I fell in love with it. And I started teaching while I was in high school and I felt super empowered by it. I could take care of myself and I could manage myself, and I got thin and I got fit, and people started to say, oh my gosh, you look amazing and you look great. And I just got more and more obsessed, and I didn't know how to control my food, and I didn't know how to relate to myself any other way than as a body. So I was completely self-objectifying myself, and things really got worse, even though my career exploded and I was being sponsored by Nike and Reebok. I was an aerobics champion. I was on the cover of magazines. I was doing workout videos, and I even had my own TV show. And from the outside, it really looked like my life as a fitness professional was top notch, right? I was, if you looked at it, I was doing everything that anybody in this profession could imagine would be considered successful, but I was more depressed. I was self-objectifying to the point where I was isolating myself. I didn't even want to go grocery shopping because I was afraid that people would look at my grocery cart and say, what is she doing even eating? Oh. And this was when I was my thinnest and my fittest.
Yep.
And there was this one point where I was doing my so-called dream job. I was doing a live workout TV show every morning. And as my habit was, I could work out 8 hours a day. I could not eat for days. I was binging, I was purging, and I could restrict so that my body would get to this, like, what I thought was ideal, but I couldn't sustain it. And so I got the TV show, and I started out super, super fit. And then as time went on, I started gaining weight. And I got called into the executive producer's office one day, and he just said, what is going on? Like, why are you gaining so much weight? And I remember leaving there, and I left that meeting, and I went to go buy crystal meth, which, if you don't know what crystal meth is, it's an extremely addictive drug, and very, it just wreaks havoc on people's lives. And yeah. I went to go buy it, and I remember being in my room and lying on my bed and literally just crying and thinking, what am I doing? Like, this is the picture of health. This is what I'm selling. This is what I'm saying we need to do in order to reach this thin ideal that not only I'm selling, but this industry is selling. And why? I kind of had what I call it, a moment of grace, where I just thought, wow, something here is terribly wrong, and I'm not the only one. And I just had this thought, this kind of awakening of, like, thinking, I'm not the only one here. I'm not the only one. There's millions of people that are trying to lose weight and keep it off and they can't. And there's millions of people who are literally suffering just like I am. I'm not the only one. I'm not just failing at this. Everybody's failing at this because this is not the answer. And we're all putting and investing money and time and emotional welfare into this ideal that is literally unattainable and unsustainable for most people. And I just made a decision that day that I was actually going to devote the rest of my life to trying to figure out how to crack this code and to find out how do I really help myself and other people. And at the time, I have to admit, I thought it was about losing weight and sustaining the weight loss. That was like my focus. But over the years, I've come to expand that idea to not being even about the body itself, but about seeing ourselves not as an object to be viewed or an ornament to be looked at, but as a human being that is here to create and live a life that is purposeful and loving and evolves us as a human being, not just as body parts.
Yes, I love that. And I'm so grateful that you said it in that way, because so often people think, because they're told this, that when they lose weight and when they look different, then everything is going to change and they're going to feel better about themselves. And to a certain extent, that can be true. But in your experience and in a lot of people that I've spoken with, it kind of turns into this obsession.
Yeah, and it's not fixing the problem that I thought right. It would fix. And one of the things that I realized that I think is super important for people to kind of get in their head is that pride is not the opposite of shame. It's its source. And so we get stuck in this pride shame loop. That's why we see so many before and after pictures, right?
Yes.
So if we see the before picture, shame, I look terrible. And then we see the pride picture right next to it. But then what happens, and we've all seen it, my gosh, you know, I'm in the fitness industry so long, how I've seen this so many times. I've been this so many times where you do it, you know, you get on that diet, you go on that weight loss, you get yourself so-called perfect for the wedding or for the event or for the party. And then what happens is whatever means you use is probably unsustainable. And then you gain weight and then it just compounds the shame because not only did you have it and you lost it, now it's even worse because now people saw you get there and now they saw you gain the weight. And it's just one of those cycles that's absolutely devastating and demoralizing. And so it's not just to get to this point of pride where, okay, look at me now. Let me put this picture up of me now because I feel like I look so great. I overcame. I did it. You'll get knocked down so much faster and so much harder that the next time you probably won't even try. And this is the conversation that I think is so important that we've got to break the cycle from. And the way that we break the cycle is to move to courage, the courage to audaciously accept ourselves, not how we look, but as a human being. And we've got to get out of this pride shame loop, stop thinking of ourselves as a body and stop weighing our worth and start to expand how we view ourselves and what we have to offer to the world.
Yes, exactly. I think that pride shame loop is so important because it's true, right? Like we think that, you know, we see these before and afters and we use that as, you know, motivation to, oh, maybe I could do that too, but it's focusing on the wrong thing. It's so interesting that shame and pride cycle can be on both sides of the weight spectrum. 'Cause yeah. For me, I've never been overweight. But I've struggled with this body confidence so much because I've almost felt like I don't have a place to feel insecure because I've never struggled with my weight. Mm. So I feel guilty about feeling insecure, and then that just makes it even worse. And so it's like allowing yourself permission to just work through those insecurities, even if you feel like you don't deserve to have them.
It's so true. And I think what's really, really important is we all have to realize that we all have a body and we all have to deal with it, right? And mm-hmm. There's just no getting around that. But I want to really highlight that what's so important is to kind of work on getting so obsessed about the body at all, and to really start to see how when we do, and when we're comparing, and when we're, even from your point of view, right, you didn't have a weight problem, how dare you even feel like you're unworthy of it in some way, of right. this confidence. And it all just keeps coming back to how we have been so trained to be so body obsessed. And this is really why so much of what I'm talking about these days is called spiritual fitness. And what that means to me is, you know, when we're focused on physical fitness, which I just read an article today that it's a $28 billion industry, the fitness industry, $28 billion. Wow. That means there's a lot going in front of our eyes about our bodies, how it should look, what healthy means, what beautiful means. And it's very difficult these days to not be relating to ourselves and comparing ourselves as a body itself, when so much of what we see is causing us to actually really look at who we are in this body. Whether it's our age, whether it's our weight, whether it's our size, or whether it's our shape, we've learned to identify more as a body than as a human being. And this is what's causing us to have so much pain and to have so many problems of like eating disorder and depression and anxiety and isolation and self-harming habits, because it's so impossible to live up to these ideals that keep us disconnected from really our true source, which is our spirit, our heart. And then body positivity, people say, love your body, love your body, love your body. But it's not about loving your body. It's yes. more than that. It's about almost ignoring the body, except mm-hmm. for keeping it healthy, feeding it in ways that we need. But also keep remembering that we're more than a body. I love the work, do you know Beauty Redefined?
Yes.
I love what they're doing, what Lexi and Lindsay are doing. And they're talking really more about being more, seeing ourselves as more than a body, seeing ourselves yep. more than beautiful. And I love, like, in one, I did their course recently, which is Body Image Resilience course, so they have so much research in there. But they really talk about being more than beautiful. And that's what I think is so, so key. Can we see ourselves as more than beautiful? That we have much more to offer than how we look in a bikini, whether in that bikini we're full figured or flat. But mm-hmm. that it's more than that. It's more than just posting a picture in a bikini, whatever size we are. And that's like the piece that I think is really, really important to remember.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that, because even if you are focusing on that, it's still a comparison, and it's still focusing on something that in the end, it's not going to bring you that fulfillment and happiness that you're looking for. So you must have a pretty different relationship with exercise than most people. Because when you shared your story, you said the first time you started exercising, you just fell in love with it. And I think that's pretty rare.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the key here is, first of all, when I was young, I, for as long as I can remember, I always wanted to be a dancer. I remember seeing photos of me at like 5 years old pretending to be a ballerina and being in my room, like daydreaming by myself and just like having this extreme urge, just like, I want to be a dancer. I want to be a dancer. And, you know, I'm one of 11 kids, so there was no way my mom was ever taking me to dance class. Right. They're just, you know, it was just impossible to be shuttling everybody around. So I didn't actually get to do that until I was much older and could drive myself. But when I went into an exercise class, it was actually a jazzercise class. And jazzercise, if you don't know, jazzercise is like just a dance class. It was like a different dance to every song. It's kind of like a Zumba style workout, but the focus was on dancing. And it was like, oh my gosh, I get to move. I get to dance. And I was kind of introverted. And I felt always lost in this sea of all these kids and people. And I never really felt seen. And so exercise just hit all those things for me. I love to move. I love to dance. And when I started teaching, it gave me an opportunity to have a voice and to express myself, which I had a very, very hard time doing. And it gave me a feeling of control over my body. It had me feel like, if I move, this happens to my body. If I don't move, this happens to my body, and I get to choose. I actually have the keys of what I put in my mouth and what I do with my body. I actually get to take charge. When before, as I was younger, it was always my mom, you know, kind of a wagging a finger at me. Why don't you go work out? Why don't you go eat less, put on makeup, don't wear those clothes, wear these clothes, do your hair like this, not like that. Like, it was just overwhelming. And when I finally felt like I had the keys to my own car, it felt so freeing. And I was good at it. I was athletic. I was coordinated. I was extremely strong, had a lot of endurance. And so, you know, I felt like I could stand out in a crowd because I found what I was really good at early on. And as time went on and I started focusing more on comparing myself and never thin enough, my mantra was thin at any cost. And as I shared in the beginning of the podcast, I really meant it. I really, really meant it. It was all that I focused on. And so when it got to that extreme, exercise turned into a weight loss tool, a weight management tool, a self-love from the outsider's perspective tool, instead of just what I loved when I first found it, which was self-expression and dancing and moving and feeling free and powerful in my body. And so what I say now to people who just hate exercise is to look at why you exercise. If it's again another punitive punishment of having to work off eating too much, or because you don't like your body and you're trying to make it look better from an outsider's point of view, why would you like it? Because you just keep reinforcing all the negative things that you feel about yourself. But when you take off the word exercise, for some people, that word in and of itself is enough to make you feel unworthy. You can just think of movement, mm-hmm. and don't think of it as a weight loss tool, because frankly, it's not even that good of a weight loss tool. It is really more about energizing. Like, I think of exercise now as just a way to kind of activate my creativity, as a way to clear my mind, as a way to get some energy to do the things that I love to do, as a way, I'm a mother of three young girls, as a way to have my body actually functioning so that when we go to Disneyland, I can walk the whole time, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think of it, I've been working on reshaping my association to even that word. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yes. And that's a good point to bring up, that when some people think of the word exercise, they already have this image in their mind of something that they hate, something that they have to do, something that they do because it's a punishment, like you said, and just reframing that a little bit to call it something else, like movement or something, and finding something you actually enjoy. I think one part of the reason people are hesitant to move and to exercise is because they have been told that exercise is running on a treadmill for 45 minutes
Right.
And it's, and I hate doing that. Like, I don't want to do that, but I'll run outside. I found that I like to run outside and I like to lift weights and I like to dance too. So if I do those things, it doesn't feel like I'm, you know, putting in my time to get the reward of a better, different looking body. It's like, well, I'm just doing this because I enjoy it and it makes me feel powerful. It makes me feel like I can use my body to do cool things. And that is something, like, of course you would want to do that. But like you said, if you're only doing it to lose weight or to fit into someone else's ideal of what your body should look like, of course no one would sign up for just voluntary punishment.
It's so true. And I really think, and part of like what I want to do is take exercise back. You know, mm-hmm. I see exercise as really medicine, because if you think about it, what happens when we move? There really is a physiological shift. Yes. There, the endorphins go, our body changes, how we see ourselves changes. And that's a real chemical change that happens. And I don't know about you, but I was just sharing this earlier. It's like when I would go in to teach class, I always start with like layers. I have leggings and then I have sweatpants and then I have a t-shirt. And I mean, then I have like a workout top and then I have a t-shirt and then I have a sweatshirt, because when I walked in the room to teach, I'm in one state. And I'm really worried about what people think about me. But mm-hmm. once I get moving and I get sweaty and those endorphins, you know, I can take off the layers without feeling so worried about what other people think. And that was really a tool that I used for myself a lot. One, because I cared what other people think. And two, because I had a terrible time looking in the mirror. Like when I would look in the mirror, I would blur my eyes so that I wouldn't be able to see myself, because it would take me down such a spiral of negativity that it would be very, very hard for me to even be present. And what I want to do is kind of remind people that exercise is the best drug in the world. One author wrote it's like a combination of an antidepressant and Ritalin, because your focus is better, your creativity is better, your ability to feel good in your body, it just changes. And when we think of exercise or movement as that drug of choice that we can have access to that isn't harmful but can be addictive, mm-hmm. We start to really take our power back, and we can start to see how much power we have to shift how we see ourselves before we even lose the weight, before we even change our shape, that our state of being, how we feel, is determining the lens with which we see ourselves and other people. And so when I created Intensati, I created it from that perspective to help people to reinforce the power that we have to shift from body identification to spirit identification. And spirit identification is really focusing more on how we feel than how we look, and understanding that how we feel is not based on a number of this on a scale. It's really based on what we're focusing on any moment, what we're saying to ourselves, and how we're using our body. So when we even do things like throw our shoulders back and walk with energy and put a smile on our face, even though it feels contrived, that, just like movement and exercises, has a chemical effect on our body. And when we feel better, we do better. We can never cause ourselves to act better by making ourselves feel worse. Mm-hmm. And that is so terribly important and something that we have to remember. If you've ever heard of self-denigration, and if people know what that means, when we self-denigrate, what we're doing is we are representing ourselves to ourselves as having little worth. So when we verbalize our failures, when we verbalize our character defects, when we verbalize our lack of ability, or when we verbalize how much we hate our body or how mm-hmm. terrible we look, what happens is it's even worse than self-criticism, because it leads to this severe erosion of self-confidence and self-esteem. And when we see ourselves as unworthy of love, unworthy of a relationship, unworthy in any way. We make less money. We put ourselves in more challenging situations. We don't say no to things that when we feel better about ourselves, we say no to. We create these boundaries. It's kind of, we tear ourselves apart in ways that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I don't know if you know what Intensati is, but Intensati is about embodying affirmations or intentions or aspirations. I like to call it, recently I've started calling it a loving kindness workout. It's a workout that we speak affirmations while we're moving, which embodies and helps us create a state of being, not a state of doing, but a state of being, so that in that state of being, we can activate courage, we can activate confidence, we can activate audacious self-acceptance or feelings that we actually think losing weight or changing our body shape is going to give us. But for those of us who have been many weights, really understand that being thinner doesn't lead to a higher level of self-worth or self-love necessarily, then we want to find what is that key to be able to awaken this spiritual state. And I don't mean that in a religious sense. I mean that in the state where you are aligned with your best self. And how powerfully that affects our lives. It affects our relationships. It affects how much we make. It affects how we create a career that's in alignment with what our true deepest desires are.
Yeah, that's so great. I love that. In that process of kind of detaching from the physical expectations and focusing on our worth as a human, so focusing on that, how does confidence tie into that? And how do you define confidence?
Well, I think confidence doesn't come from waiting to feel confident. I feel like when you act, then you feel confident.
Yes.
Usually we want to wait till we feel confident to act, but it's actually the opposite, because when you're scared, when you're nervous, when you're thinking, oh my gosh, what will they think about me? How could I wear this? Or how could I put this bikini on? I have to wait until I lose the weight before I ever go out. But when you actually do it anyway, and you say, screw it, this is my life. I'm putting that bikini on. My kids are on the beach. I want to go play with them. That awakens in you. And if you, I don't know if you've ever heard of the work of David Hawkins, Power versus Force, and the Map of Consciousness. And what he talks about is different levels of consciousness have different energy. So when you're in a state of shame, which in his map of consciousness is the lowest level, shame is about, he gives it a level of 20. So think of this as energy, right? So shame is at the bottom of his map of consciousness, where a lot of people who are hating their body really live here, shame and guilt. But then pride is 175, and that's the top of this lower level consciousness. So pride is what he calls force. You're still forcing yourself to do something. You're working against what you really believe you are. But when you move to the level of courage, which is what he calls a level of 200, when you move to courage, so that for that example would be putting the bathing suit on and going anyway, or going to, I don't know, that audition or that job interview, even if you don't feel great or good enough. You move to the level of courage, which he calls the level of power. And when you move into a state of power, life now starts working on your side. And you're not working against something, you're working with something. But it doesn't happen until the moment where you step out of that place of fear and actually courageously step out. And I think that's where you build confidence, where you do those things that you're afraid to do, where you show up when you think you are somehow not good enough to show up anyway. And this is what I call breaking the spell of unworthiness. You have to find within yourself that courage to do those things that you don't want to do because you're afraid of what other people think, you're afraid of looking bad, you're afraid of being laughed at. And when you do it, and even if those things happen, even if someone laughs at you or you don't get the job or you don't get the love that you want or the respect from other people, you realize that this was always an inside job anyway. And when you step into that state of courage, you literally change. Your level of consciousness changes. Your view of life changes. Your view of yourself changes. And that's, to me, what happens with confidence is that ability to do something that you, on one hand, don't think you're good enough to do in some way, and you do it anyway. And that's when you earn that confidence muscle.
Yeah, kind of giving yourself permission to do the things that you want. You have to take action first and kind of do that scary thing, but then everything starts to fall into place.
Yeah, and it's never about the weight loss anyway.
Right.
It's never about the job anyway. We think it is because we're so body identified. We are so identified with this physical reality. When I get that job, when I lose the weight, when I get that date, mm-hmm. we're so focused on the physical, but the physical is a result of the spiritual.
Yes.
Everything that's in the physical world has its roots in the invisible world. And we just keep trying to move furniture on the Titanic instead of really going in and making a change in our being. And that Intensati is really about having you understand that you don't need to lose the weight to feel confident. When you feel confident, I don't even want to use weight loss in that example because it's so wrong. I can't even finish that sentence, but
yep.
Let's say, for instance, you want to wait to feel healthy. You want to wait till you feel whole, till you get healthy, let's say. Mm-hmm. But it's actually the other way around. You'll get healthy when you feel whole. Or you want that job because you think it's going to make you feel empowered. But that job won't come into your life until you embody empowerment. It starts at the level of being. And how do you affect change on the level of being, on the level of your spirit, on that invisible part of you, is you have to understand that it's a decision we make not based on what we have, what we weigh, who we are, what job we have, but when we identify as a spirit, we see that how we are being is what's determining what happens to us on our physical level, on our spiritual level, and on our financial level, and on our relationships. And we have control over that. We can change how we see ourselves. We can change how we feel by changing our physiology, by changing how we breathe, by changing what we say in our heads, by stopping this awful habit that I think we all have of denigrating ourselves. I'm not good enough. I don't look good enough. I'm getting too old. I'm getting too fat. They'll never like me. Why would I do that? That conversation, that inner critic taking over our life, is so much more harmful than I think anybody really understands. And that's why Intensati, being spiritual fitness, is all about understanding that we need to rewrite those neural pathways. We need to interrupt those inner conversations of, I'm not good enough, this will never be, and really relating to our body as who we are, because it will never, ever, ever lead us to a life of confidence and love and purpose.
Mm-hmm. What would you say you did in order to start allowing yourself to move towards that?
First of all, you really have to get out of this quick fix mentality, because this is something that's so ingrained in our culture. It's so ingrained, not just us, but if you know the study of epigenetics, this stuff gets handed down from my mom and her mm-hmm. mom and how women are seen. And it's really some real deep spiritual work. It's really not what it seems like on the outside, where it's like, okay, let's just try to lose a few pounds. It's yeah. so deeply ingrained in so much of us that we have to really take it seriously and not get caught up into this idea that if I lose a few pounds, this is going to cure it. Because it doesn't. We got to work on the spiritual level. So that time, when that happened, the first thing that happened, which, you know, I'm a student of Buddhism. The first thing that happened, and this relates to that, is that I understood that I wasn't the only one. When I had this idea that I started to remember the statistics that 0.1% of people that try to lose weight actually lose weight and keep it off, and that the average person starts and stops a diet 5 to 6 times a year. And I started to really relate that, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one here, because that's the shame mindset, right? I'm the only one. There's other people can do this and I can't. Other people are better than me. And that already in and of itself, when you identify this struggle is not just you, but a struggle that we all deal with. For me, that was something that was huge in having me realize, oh my gosh, this that I want to break free from, I'm not just doing it for myself. I'm not. I'm doing it for my sister, my mom, my community, my kids, my wife. Like, if I can break this cycle, I can help break it for a lot of other people. And that just gave me a lot of strength, because when I was teaching before, I call it the difference between teaching for applause. How do I look? Do you like me? Am I in a body that you find admirable enough that you'll want to come to my class for? That's doing it for applause. How many people are showing up? Am I on the cover of a magazine or even in a magazine? Did I get the best of New York City? Like, am I heralded as the best versus a cause? When I had that moment at my on my bed where I was wondering if I was going to do the crystal meth again or if I was going to find another way, I started to think about how other people were trapped in this and how I wanted to find an answer that was going to be for more than just me. And that connecting is that level of compassion. That compassion for myself as a human being, being stuck in this world where we idealize the body and have our soul these thin ideals. There was a level of compassion that I had for myself as opposed to shame. And compassion is a very high energy. It's extremely high. And in the presence of compassion, we can heal those mindsets of shame and guilt and even pride. And what happens is I moved into my heart instead of moving further into body identification. And though that's the energy that heals us. So when we have compassion for ourselves, when we forgive ourselves for being stuck in this mindset, when we think about all the other people who are just like us that are struggling from this mindset and from this handed down state of self-objectifying, we gain strength. And I don't want people to kind of discount that just moving into this feeling of like sad for ourselves that we're stuck in this mindset can be a can go a long way in helping us see things differently. And that's one of the things I actually really love about the body positivity movement is a lot of people speaking up and saying, enough, I am putting on a bathing suit and what you think about me is not going to stop me. And I think it's actually giving people a lot of courage to kind of say, wow, I'm not the only one. I can do this too. I don't have to be stuck in this isolation mindset. And I can really tap into the power of community.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. And realizing that, you know, it's not about necessarily self-love, like it is, but sometimes people have a problem with that because they're like, well, how do I love myself when I am in a cycle of self-hatred? Like, I can't love myself right now. It's that compassion. You don't have to think your cellulite is sexy. You just need to realize this, it's okay. There's right. like a difference between self-hatred and thinking badly about those things about yourself you don't like, and then self-love, like that's a pretty big jump to make. But if you can just get yourself to compassion and to feeling like it's okay, I don't have to hate this about myself, even though I don't like it. I don't have to actively put energy into tearing myself apart.
Yeah. And I think that is a huge, really, really, really important. It's not about like exactly what you said. Oh, I have cellulite. I have to now love it. Mm-hmm. Like that's impossible.
Yeah.
Really. But what we can do is when we stop identifying ourselves as a body, this is the hugest key. This is where like the Beauty Redefined Lexi and Lindsay's work is, I think that next level is, it's not about loving our body and saying, oh my gosh, I have a beautiful body, when we actually don't think that we do. Mm-hmm. That is okay. But to say, I am more than a body, this is normal, and start to really question these mindsets that we hold and that lead us down this shame spiral, and start to say, oh my gosh, it's normal to have cellulite. It's normal to have a belly. It's normal. And it doesn't mean I'm unhealthy, and it doesn't mean I am a glutton. This is what a normal body looks like. Even if I'm 5'10", I'm a big girl. And what I had to do to get to what I thought was the ideal body was so extreme and so unhealthy. It was just absolutely impossible for me to live at that level. And those are the kinds of things we have to start remembering, is that through media and through like now social media so much, and all of the photoshopping and all of the self-objectification sales pitches that we get, mm-hmm. is really a false idea of what it means to be in a human body. It's just not real. And I think if we can have compassion for ourselves and really go, wow, I've bought into this for so long, and it's really challenging to break free from this mindset, we can just kind of cry a little bit about it. Like I really cry and have a feeling of absolute heartbreak when I look back at photos of myself when I was thinner than I am now, and thinking how horrible I felt and how sad I was and mm-hmm. how I hated myself and my body. It breaks my heart. And when I think about, I have three girls, when I think about them growing up and being stuck in this mindset, it really gives me a lot of inspiration and motivation to really create communities that are really going up against these ideals.
Yeah. And coming from a perspective of someone like yourself who's in the fitness industry, so you know what it's like to have that body that everybody wants, and you know how unsustainable it really is because you've lived it.
Yeah. And it's so important. I mean, I see, like, I don't know. I always refer to, I don't know if on in social media, you ever look at the hashtag FinSpo, and I don't recommend anybody go look if they really will get triggered by kind of eating disorder things, because this is really like the worst of the worst consequence of self-objectification. Because if you look there, you see girls that are really anorexic, and their hashtags are all like suicide, ugly. Yeah. It's, you know, I look at that often just to kind of keep my heart super tender. Mm-hmm. I literally cry thinking of it, because it's so devastating I know that pain, and to see so many people whose lives literally get lost because they feel ugly and they believe that beautiful is everything, or they've been so used to being objectified and afraid, like this fat phobia situation is so deeply rooted in our psyche that we can't even see this body dysmorphia and this level that these young girls are going to find a solution where it will never be found. And, you know, social media really, really adds to that. And again, with three young girls, I am on a mission more than ever to help in some way create communities that are really standing up against this so they don't have to be sucked in to this identifying themselves as only as good as the scale says or as beautiful as they think they are. And I really think it's absolutely devastating that so many lives are lost to this.
That's kind of the same reason. I mean, I don't have kids, but I always think about just like the legacy that I'm going to leave behind and like, what do I want my life's work to be? And if I do have daughters, like, what do I want to say, you know, mom does? And that's one of the huge inspirations I had to start this podcast was like, what would I tell my daughter if I had one? And then how can I get that message out to people who do have daughters and people who are working through these things? Like, what would I say?
Totally. And I think the key here is to get away from this obsession of weight. And so we have to really get off of this obsession of just how we look and really focus on these powerful life-enhancing emotions of love and compassion and kindness. And really remember, being human is hard. Mm-hmm. It just is hard. We have ups and downs. We have difficulties and challenges, and we have great things too. But if we are not cultivating this ability to deal with difficult times and deal with difficult emotions from a place of self-awareness and mindfulness, then we're going to get constantly taken up in these swirls of difficult challenges and go in these downward spirals. And we can use these hard times, like I love what you're doing with being the body confidence, is we can use these difficult times to actually develop resilience. Mm-hmm. And actually be able to bounce back more quickly. But we can't do that if we're identifying as just a body. We have to develop our spirit. We have to be able to be more present so that when our body changes, we can still show up to things that are important to us. And that's why I'm really focused on spiritual fitness, on community, on being around people who are taking down this conversation of this weight loss, diet mentality, and really focusing on self-love and moving as medicine and activating positive states of being, not because of what you weigh, not because of what you have, not because of what you do, but simply because as a human being, you have the capability to create a positive state independent of your circumstances. I think that's one of the greatest gifts we have as a human being, to be able to do that. But if you don't exercise it, if you don't train it, you don't have the ability to do it when it really matters.
Yes. Wow, that is so good.
Well, right now I just created a waiting list for my new program because it is going to launch in January, and it's a year-long program with accountability. So I'm leading it. It's practices, it's routines, it's workouts, all created to become more spiritually fit and love in action. Not just talking about love, but really taking back this word love and what it means to actually be a person who loves themselves. So if you want to be on that waiting list, it's patriciamoreno.com/365. And then you'll be able to start being on my email list and getting all of that. I also on Facebook do daily live streams at 1 o'clock on my community page. That's a great way to hear more nuggets. And I always focus on daily action. Obviously on Instagram, Patricia Moreno 33 and Intensati. And you know, if you want to teach Intensati, if you want to be in this conversation more, you want to be a leader in this conversation, that's a lot of what I teach people to do. So you can just check out patriciamoreno.com as well.